Good evening and welcome, dear ones. Let us begin in the name of God transcendent, God omnipresent, God immanent, indwelling, the Holy Living Trinity, in whom we live and move and have our being. And so it is. Welcome to each of you. The Christ candle is again lit this evening as a symbol of the light that is always with us and in us as a central being. And this work on which we place ourselves under this evening, in order that it has a collective focus, and we are under the protection of this canopy, this focus, for our time together. And we will be protected by it and hopefully influenced by its influences. This evening, for our reflection, we turn to a gentleman by the name of Robert Fripp. Now you might ask, who is Robert Fripp? Professionally, he was the lead guitarist for a popular rock band in the 1970s by the name of King Crimson. And just perhaps there are a few of us around that could actually remember that band. But in addition to his professional life, he also happens to be a very serious work student, a student of J.G. Bennett and the teachings of Gurdjieff. So we might ask ourselves, why music at the beginning of our time together? Why music at the end of our time together? This is what Robert Fripp wrote as a preface for a book entitled Gurdjieff Harmonic Development, which was published in 2004. In our time and culture, we approach music variously as entertainment, as ambient background to tune our environment, as aesthetic and intellectual delight, perhaps sensual pleasure, remembrance of past and happy times, perhaps a cultural event. But music as medicine, instruction manual, prompter of conscience. These are far less common views of music. Also relatively uncommon is the notion that the state of the listener significantly determines the degree to which the music may enter our world. Similarly, music is only present in our lives to the extent that we are present to ourselves. This implies that the discipline of the listener is as rigorous as that of the musician, if honorably undertaken. Music is a benevolent presence, constantly and readily available to us all, so wishing to be heard that it calls on some to give it voice and some to give it ears. May we trust the inexpressible benevolence of the creative impulse. So music as medicine, as instruction manual, prompter of conscience. Could that be so? Well, let's come and see. Next Tuesday evening, there will be a musical offering, both in person as well as online. The Gurdjieff music will be offered at 7 p.m. Central Daylight Time in both venues. And so you can find more information about that both on the church's website and in tomorrow's email that will go out. Do come for some medicine. So, Catherine, we will want to turn to spotlight view. if you could do that. And let us now place ourselves under the canopy of the work in stillness of being, in inner tranquility, in wonder at the grandeur and nobility of our work, our cosmos, a human life. And we prepare ourselves to listen deeply to the higher influences that are wishing to enter into us, to have our emotional center enlivened with valuation for these influences that are trying to reveal themselves directly to us without intermediary, and to receive all with a sense of beauty and reverence. With back upright and heart open, mind in directed attention, we breathe in deeply all every most hidden part of our being, all being, everything. Everything that may be hurt. Everything that may seem dark, harsh, shameful, maimed, ugly, irreparably damaged, diseased, unforgiving and unforgivable, resentful, resistant, apathetic, everything. And we hold it as offering and lift it, transubstantiate it in faith, in hope, in love, in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant, as loved. As Christ, in light. And we do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into the world, all worlds. I am. I wish I can work. I stand unencumbered before God and one another. May Lord have mercy on us. We will now enter into the prayer of Lectio Divina, which will be shared on the screen. And you may wish to either read along or just listen or gaze upon the image for how it speaks to you of this passage. It will be read 3 times with silence in between each reading. But as for you, O one of God, aim and at and pursue true goodness, devotion, faith, love, steadfastness, and gentleness. For we have laws to follow, laws of the universe, not invented by man, simple laws, yet unchanging, There can be no others. There could be none better. Not even the maker of the universe will change you unless you change your mind. Unless you abandon the path of avarice, sensual pleasure, and self-exaltation. Unless you collapse, fold in on yourself, and open out of yourself. Unless you release everything, redirect all of your energy. Despoil yourself of all that is not of the way. Renounce your will, inclinations, whims, and fantasies, and allow yourself to be carried by the one downstream, down to the still pool, drinking of which you shall never thirst again. But as for you, O one of God, aim at pursue true goodness, devotion, faith, love, steadfastness, and gentleness. For we have laws to follow, laws of the universe not invented by man, simple laws, yet unchanging. There can be no others. There could be none better. Not even the maker of the universe will change you unless you change your mind, unless you abandon the path of avarice, sensual pleasure, and self-exaltation. Unless you collapse, fold in on yourself, and open out of yourself. Unless you release everything, redirect all of your energy. Despoil yourself of all that is not of the way. Renounce your will, inclinations, whims, and fantasies, and allow yourself to be carried by the one downstream, down to the still pool, drinking of which you shall never thirst again. But as for you, O one of God, aim at and pursue true goodness, devotion, faith, love, steadfastness, and gentleness. For we have laws to follow, laws of the universe, not invented by man. Simple laws, yet unchanging. There can be no others. There can be none better. Not even the maker of the universe will change you unless you change your mind, unless you abandon the path of avarice, sensual pleasure, and self-exaltation, unless you collapse, fold in on yourself, and open out of yourself, unless you release everything, redirect all of your energy, despoil yourself of all that is not of the way, renounce your will, inclinations, whims, and fantasies, and allow yourself to be carried by the one downstream, down to the still pool, drinking of which you shall never thirst again. Amen. You are now invited to share what you received, what came to you through this message, the image, the silence. Yes, Lisa, welcome.
Thank you. Good evening. What I heard was to allow yourself to be carried by the one downstream. And the word downstream is symbolic of non-resisting. There's a lot in my life that I'm resisting and working, pushing against. And so that was a reminder to me to trust life, to know that it's happening in the only way that it can, and that what may be unpleasant for me or feel like suffering may be the exact direction that I'm meant to go downstream to a place where hopefully I won't be thirsty.
Ever again. Yes.
That was a very beautiful passage, though. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. Catherine.
I really was struck by the image and the way the hands were raised. It seemed to me they were both an image of releasing and being open, and that circle and the edges of the circle just seemed like it was being open to higher influences. And I like the idea that the same image could be both releasing and receiving.
Yes, indeed. Thank you, Catherine. Don or Deborah?
Evening, Marianne.
Good evening, Don and Deborah.
Redirect your energy. And that resonated in me as a applies to the observation of how much of my energy I've been observing goes toward hiding parts of myself behind the buffers that have been erected, the walls that protect me from things I don't need to be protected from. I learn more and more, but they're so strong and the energy is so channeled in that direction that it's hard to, even upon observing the need to stop directing the energy, to stop it. And I realized in that moment that spending energy on trying to stop it is a waste of energy. And I'm reminded that it is the light of consciousness that does the healing. Thank you for the reminder.
Yes, thank you, Don. Thank you. Bob.
I was struck with the phrase, unless you collapse, fold in on yourself, and open out to yourself. What came to me was emptying and becoming nothing, and in the process becoming everything.
Amen.
I thought that was lovely.
Yes, thank you, Bob. Thank you very much. Cynthia and friends.
Well, I heard something similar to Bob. So I also heard collapse, fold in, but what really struck me was then to go out of self. And what I thought of was the Psalm, the 23rd Psalm, where it says, I shall not fear, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. What I thought of was, he leadeth me beside the still waters, and he restores my soul. And I think that's how it's speaking to me in moving out of self.
Indeed. Thank you, Cynthia. And Alicia, please.
So I heard the part about not even the maker of the universe will change you unless you change your mind. And there was a time in my life where it became very critical. I had a lot of intrusive thoughts. And I remember when I heard this, I thought it wasn't so much about changing my mind. It was quieting the mind, stilling the mind, going into silence. And that's sort of that same idea of the still pool that I can draw from that. And that is what has changed. And then it's that idea of open mind and open heart, which then led, you know, to the opening of my heart. So
thank you, Alicia. Thank you. Ken. Good evening, Ken. I think it's Ken or Sandra.
I was really struck by the image. Can you guys see me?
We can't see your image right now.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, okay.
Oh, there you are.
Okay, yeah, I disappeared. I was struck by the image, the way the thumbs were tilted. Mm. You know, if I just let my eyes go soft, it revealed the shape of a heart in the middle of the target. And it brought me back to a memory of my paternal grandmother lived with us through my entire childhood. And she had this very large painting in her room, larger than the one that's behind you, of what she called the Sacred Heart. So it was an image of Jesus. And he was kind of holding this very large heart in the center. And then I saw the hands, the way they were raised, the two lines that were above the hands reminded me of this very brief period in my life when I was a waiter, so mm-hmm. serving. Yes. And I just saw these hands kind of holding up the heart and kind of releasing the heart, offering it. So there was a lot in there for me. Thank you.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Ken. And thank you for everyone, for your sharing, for your presence. We're enlivened by all of it and blessed. So thank you. And now we will move into the next portion of our evening. And I'm very pleased to introduce Karen again this week, who will accompany us on our journey into aim and truth and goodness. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you. Thank you, Marianne. Well, let's start with homework. Let me get up our slide to remind us. So we had the opportunity, I hope everyone had the opportunity to watch The Powers of 10. And if you didn't, the link is here. It was in the email, and these will be posted to the website probably by Monday. And then reading perhaps several times, ponder this message and the one from last year, April 2nd. What's your understanding of conscience? What does that mean for you? And observe your contradictions. There you say one thing, do another, or expect something from someone you would not do yourself. And there were many words, yes. Maybe you will be drawn to the image. How does it speak to your heart about conscience? So how did the homework and the message last week land for you? Jackie. Or Lee. You remuted, Jackie. There you go.
Okay, so you can hear me now.
Yes, ma'am.
I had read the homework prior or the message prior to. And I decided to look at and study Dr. David Hopkins' map of the scale of consciousness, and which showed me our negative states of consciousness, which there is no happiness there, beginning at the bottom at level 20, was shame, guilt, apathy, grief, fear, desire, anger, and pride. And then our positive states of consciousness, which is where we find happiness, beginning midway at level 200, which is courage, neutrality, willingness, acceptance, reason, love, joy, peace, and enlightenment. And last week I had nothing to do and started noticing the feeling of boredom and frustration, creating a restriction of my breathing and heat settling in my chest. Then the mind tried making a list of what I could do, and knowing that thoughts are lies, I reached for work ideas. The Holy Spirit reminded me that I could sit in the silence and be totally okay doing that. Sitting there, I could feel my chest relax, the frustration begin to dissipate, and the thinking coming to a stop. I was aware of a rising consciousness from anger to courage. Courage to place myself under the authority of the work through study and application of work ideas. I was then reminded through self-remembering that all was well just where I am.
Oh, thank you. Beautifully put, beautifully put. Boredom is, I know, one that I struggle with too. And it's interesting that it's a struggle. You know, boredom's just another feeling, another sensation. And frankly, what's wrong with being bored?
Right.
You know, so it's one that we do have to struggle with, because it will drag us down into those levels of falsehood so fast. But like you reported, you know, you can also take it up into the levels of truth. Well, Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Jeannie, please.
I am in the process of moving. So I've been going through my things and I realized that items that I've moved from place to place, I was keeping because of my mother's values, not my own. Mm-hmm. And I realized the incongruity there and then consistency. And also with my Waldorf books, I guess I felt that the more books I had, the more kind of savvy I was and more connected to a profession that I only served for a short time. So these contradictions and then passing these things on is just a big release. So that it was very helpful with the homework. Thank you.
Oh, great. Because like you said, passing on, the idea of the sins of the father, and it's not that your things are sinful by any means, but we're passing on things to our children that they frankly don't want. And how do they serve us? You know, it's an interesting thing to watch that, for me anyway, to watch those things now that I'm retired that I don't want to let go of from my profession, but I'm not going to use them ever again. And in fact, they're rather outdated now. So the idea of possession is, it's a strong one. So good. Oh, thank you. Marnie.
Hi, everyone. It's good to be with you tonight. Hi. I guess I should start by saying I'm the mother of one child, a 12-year-old boy, and we're a homeschooling family. So he and I spend a lot of time together. And I feel like that one relationship alone, being present in that relationship with him, has provided me with all the school I could ever ask for. I see it becomes painfully obvious where there are areas for growth. And I chose to work with the contradictions exercise this week. And I saw, primarily with my son, which is why I mentioned that. And I saw over and over again in the course of the week, places where I was expecting out of him something that I wouldn't provide myself, or not accepting a behavior from him that I engage in regularly. And I guess I came out of the week just really grateful for the experience of having observed this, because I feel like what it did was kind of scoop out this place where grace could grow and live in me when I can't hold him to a standard that I don't hold myself to. And I see my own hypocrisy or my own lack of alignment with my own values. And so the only response really is grace, and both for myself and for others. And so I came away from the exercise just deeply grateful for the opportunity to once again increase the space inside for grace to grow. Mm-hmm. So thank you. It was a wonderful exercise.
Oh, good, good. Many times others show us great things about ourselves. And quite frankly, we wouldn't believe them if they were told to us. So we have to see, and everyone acts as a mirror for us. It's a great gift we have. Yeah, thank you. Jim.
Hi, Karen.
Hi.
So I had been waking up several days in a row with a real heaviness, and my mind was ruminating. And then when the email arrived and I began to study it and read it and try to sit with it and just allow it to speak to me, I began to say, well, I'm going to go look at that video. And I had actually, there's another video like that that came out in the 70s that I've actually used in my teaching practice. And But when I opened this video up, something clicked in me. And the whole idea of scale began to be clearer to me. And then the idea of unless you become like little children, you cannot enter the kingdom of God. And then that experience of scale and the appreciation for the magnitude of this megalocosmos, I think it's called, seemed to release me. And what I realized is that I'd been waking up in the morning with that heaviness because I had a psychological sense of separation. And entering into the idea of that cosmos and how little tiny I am as a part of it, yet how special it is that I get to play this role, caused me to wake up to how connected I am. And so I've watched that video now several times, and that heaviness isn't there in the morning now. And so I'm really thankful for that email, for that idea, and for kind of a different understanding of scale and how it fits inside of me.
Oh, great. Great. Someone else somewhere said, you know, that how great it is that the God, the creator of the universe, looked down and decided that we needed you. You know, so yeah, anytime you're not feeling special, just know that you were created to be exactly what and who you are. And that idea of scale that's so beautifully represented in the video, I think helps, at least helps me to see the beauty of the very cells of my body that are just being mirrored for me over and over again out into the cosmos. And so like little children, can we have a sense of wonder about it all? You know, I don't have to be so knowledgeable. Oh, I understand cellular biology. Okay, fine. But can I have wonder about the beauty of that creation? So thank you, Jim. Thanks for sharing that. Steve.
Well, like Jim, I focused on the Morgan Freeman video. And I became enamored with it, not so much because of the sense of the grand scale of it, but as it you pan out just a bit, I'd say stop right there. Because one of the things that struck me about the description of conscience was it's almost like holding your whole self in your hands as observing eye and bearing it all. The negative parts of you, the more aspirational parts of oneself, and holding more, we can hold more of that than we think we can in balance. It's kind of like owning the shadow. And then and when you stand, pull back from the planet Earth with all of its problems, you're down here, and then you pull back and you see this jewel, and you tend to objectivize it more. And you go, oh, there's the ocean, there's the clouds, there's the land masses. But all the stuff that's going on this jewel. So it takes all of your own little universe, your own little jewel inside your head or your heart, and puts it in all in perspective. And I just started thinking about just, you know, when you're on Twitter and the folks acting out in airplanes and stores and coughing on people, and it's very easy to get indignant. And then you just pull back and you go, you know, I think everyone's having a hard time here on this little jewel of a planet. And, just to take it in and say, you know, everyone's having a hard time. We're all having a hard time. And it allows a lot more forgiveness and just the freedom of spirit. So that's what I focused on this week.
Oh, that's great. You're right. That perspective allows us to truly externally consider that everyone is having a hard time. And I love the image of holding yourself with all your wonders and wonderfulness and messiness. That's a good image. Thank you. I'll keep that one. Catherine, please.
Well, Steve spoke really well for some of what my experience was, but there was an event in my life this week with a young member of my family, a dear loved one, who bravely shared with me some ways in which I had hurt that person.
Mm.
And it was a very, a shocking experience to hear that, and then to, feel that the lower levels of consciousness, the shame or regret, or whatever, for having hurt somebody with my words. And so I was really kind of in that place when I was being in the journey group. And I just felt so supported by my, fellow travelers on this, spiritual journey, and that what I could see in the sort of how I'm seeing what conscience is as feeling all together is that similar to what Steve was saying, when I could see that I that hurt people and the I that has loved people, the same person in so many ways, that whole variety of I's and our multiplicities, that feeling all together is like feeling a higher self that incorporates all of those personality eyes. And, it just gave me, and the other kind of sense that I had of feeling all together is feeling all the people who have those events of not behaving the way that you have in the picture of yourself,
mm-hmm.
and bearing it, and just knowing that there's a higher self to be identified with than being identified with the lower self who did something wrong. So that was where feeling all together was useful to me.
Oh, that's great. Yes, I hear in that the scale of the level of being that, you were able to look from a higher level of being back into a time of a lower level and to give yourself mercy. Because we are, as you said, one of whatever it is, 7 billion people on this planet who have all done the same thing. Yeah, great. Thank you, Catherine. Kathleen.
This class is really helping me, and I never understood this concept before of conscience being seeing all of your emotions. And I raised my hand before Catherine spoke, but Catherine, I could just say ditto and leave it at that. But I really appreciate what everyone said, but I'll go ahead and share. Mm-hmm. So week before last, I was with my son's family, my son and my daughter-in-law and their 2-year-old daughter and their newborn boy. And I spent a week with them, and I was determined to just be a loving presence and serve and be a neutral force. And I was, and the week was just wonderful. It was magical, really. It was just mm-hmm. fabulous. And of course, nothing's happier than a newborn and a 2-year-old. And then this week, I was with my sisters. I have 5 sisters, and we're all 2 years apart. And we were born, raised in a very intense competitive family, but I have really some wonderful sisters. And I was with 2 of my sisters. And the picture I have in the mind of my mind of our conversation is like these encounters with police and a perpetrator, and where every instance when somebody could have de-escalated, instead it was escalated. And my sisters are intelligent and sincere and good people. And we had the worst conversation where we triggered each other. We said things that we shouldn't have said about our childhoods that shouldn't matter anymore. And
And we were all miserable. All three of us were equally miserable and offended and offensive. And it was just shocking that I could both participate in this blessed week and then this kind of horrific incident. But I did, and so it's really helped me what everybody said, but I like this last sentence that says, that is to go out to meet all those inner sufferings which are connected with the sensations of contradictions, realizing that the result of this work will be every possible discomfort from the awakening of conscience. So this class is making me feel, instead of miserable, that maybe I am awakening conscience. And I really love everyone's talking about the higher forces because it really helps to see that grace of the first week is really no different than the grace in the second week. They just look
exactly
different.
Exactly. Beautiful. And I heard in that, you know, a beautiful picture of the pendulum. You had that beautiful high week of love, mm-hmm. and you were met with a beautiful high week of conflict. Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing. Mm-hmm. Mary Leah.
Hi, Karen.
Hey.
I too was struck by the Morgan Freeman video. And as we watched it, I was conscious of being in Venice and looking up and that huge big funnel, you know, of the cosmos. And then when we flip around and we look down, another huge big branch. But what I was struck with this time seeing it was the fact that I was at that intersection of the cosmos, the megalocosmos, mm-hmm. the microcosmos, and there I stood. And it stirred in me the notion of that verticality, that I stand in the eternal now as I walk in the horizontal plane, mm-hmm. that I have this opportunity at every moment to be there in the intersection of that megalocosmos and the microcosmos. And it's just such a lifting. I even feel myself standing up more straight when I think of myself being in that vertical. Mm-hmm. And I was able to hold that image for quite a few days. And I just wanted to relay one thing that brought me right back to it. I took in the dark, 6:15 one morning, I took the pail of compost up the hill. And I was taking it early because I was embarrassed that I was throwing food away and I didn't want my beloved to notice that. And I haven't told you that yet. I was throwing away a bag of beans that had somehow found themselves to the bottom of the fridge and escaped my notice, and they got slimy in the bag, and I was quite right to take them out. But I was also very embarrassed, and as I walked back down the hill, I realized, wow, isn't that silly? And I had an observation, and I'm not identified, and I came into that place of verticality. And right as I did so, the rooster next door crowed. And then, not a heartbeat after that, one of those semi-truck Jake brakes on the highway came. There was that second sound. And then, as I noticed that second sound, across the valley floated the bells of the Buddhist temple, those 9 bells. And so I stood there in this sonorous mix of these 3 sounds, and I was fully awake. I was fully present. I'm hearing this, you know, rooster crowing 3 times in 3 different ways. It was just crazy. And I said to my work partner later that morning, well, 7 minutes later, I said, there's never been another woman on the planet taking out the compost and hearing a rooster, a Jake brake, and Buddhist bells. And then I said, actually, that's true for every moment. There's never been another one who's experienced this moment. This breath, and it is a tremendous gift to have found that notion of verticality. And so, how blessed am I?
Yes. Well, thank you. Thank you for blessing us. One of the symbols that had come to me was the Seal of Solomon. And as you were talking, I was thinking that, you know, exactly, we're standing there in the point of the, you know, the top triangle and the bottom triangle. We're right there. We are the intersection of all that's grand and glorious above and below us.
I thought about that. That's exactly right. The intersection of the 2 triangles. I hadn't thought about the Solomon yet.
Great. Yeah. Thank you. Well, we have time for one more. Anyone else like to share? Well, I'll share a little bit of my week. Was a little like Kathleen's. I had a granddaughter with me, and found myself, you know, loving the idea of, you know, I love grandmotherhood. It's just great. And yet, you know, she's a 10-year-old and has all the things 10-year-olds have and do and want and be. So she exhausts me. So here I am loving, adoring this child, and on the same hand going, oh my God, please go find something to do. Just having to laugh at the holding both sides of that coin, or both sides of that, you know, folding the stick with both ends, that I can know deep love and abiding good and all of these things. And I can know my humanity that has an energy level that just stops. And knowing that all of this is just exactly what I'm supposed to be. It's all okay. And she loves me anyway, so it's good. It's all good. Well, one more call. Pam, please.
I just can't let the class go by without mentioning this image that's on the front. Was anybody else as captivated by this beautiful image as I was? I have got, now I'm anybody that knows me knows that I mark things up and write all over stuff. This page, there is not a single, I printed out the email, there's not a single space that doesn't have some reverence and comment about this beautiful painting on here. But the latest one that I came up with was Genesis, in the beginning. If you read Genesis and look at this image, it's profound. Mm-hmm. It's profound. And things like, have you noticed where the white orb descending meets this tiny bulbous pink piece right here? Mm-hmm. What is that? It's touching something. It's so fleshy looking right there. And the little tendrils off to the side. It's like Pamela had said something about an arc, and I could almost see like a ferry boat, you know. It's so ephemeral there, moving. But underneath that, there's this faintly glowing other thing. There's light. Look at all the light in this. There's the white light and the yellow light, and there's the light coming through the slits, and there's the, where is the light coming from that's hitting the two little leaf-like things that come up like this? It's just fascinating. I'm going to Walgreens and having this sucker blown up, and I'm putting it next. I mean, I've got a couple that we've had through the years, and they continue to feed me. And this is just the last little thing I'll say. Sister Wendy said about Visio Divina. Sister Wendy said, you look at an image until your mind has done everything with it that it can possibly do, and there's no more associations, no more stories. No, that's how long you need to look at an image for it to feed you from the invisible realm and grace you with what it really has to offer, because the mind's got to be done with it. Just like everything else, it's got to get over it, you know. But yeah. What a fascinating thing. So thank you. Whoever found that image, Marianne, whoever it was.
Well, and I think that's one of the beauties and the magic of images, is I'm not sure they're ever done feeding us. And the fact is that they're meant to enliven our hearts, whether our mind can engage in it or not. So great. Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you everyone who shared. You know, what a full week we had. So this week, first of all, I want to thank you for your indulgence. I did talk a lot last week. So this week, I do hope to have time to have you share your thoughts on our topic of aims, truth, and goodness. I'm going to plan to pause between sections and ask, so you know, please feel free. And I need to apologize for yet allergy symptoms. I've taken everything I can, but I probably will have another coughing spell. And sorry, I know they're kind of annoying, but anyway, thank you very much for all of it. So tonight we're going into, like Marianne said, aims and truth and goodness. And the Excuse me. The title, I think, works great as a sequence diagram. And this is my attempt at a very primitive sequence diagram, but work aims lead us to truth. And that then enables us to make aims to lead us to good. So as we said last week, we explored the relationship with the vertical connection and some of the practices we have that help us to see it and feel it. And we've begun to awaken our conscience so that now we can begin to work on aims that will lead us to truth and goodness. You know, we're all about this relationship with real conscience. And remember, that comes to us through our higher centers. So right now, as we are, the work is taking the part of our real conscience, and it's teaching us what real conscience would if we were awake. In the email, we're reminded in the Gospels that the Christ puts what's good above what is truth. Now, truth is on the side of knowledge, but good is the meaning of knowledge. Christ reworded the truth of the Ten Commandments and gave us the Great Commandment as a fulfillment of the law, because truth finds its completion in good. So we were told, love the Lord your God with all your heart, and all your soul, and all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. Our level of good is raised by our knowledge of truth about a higher good. And as we gain knowledge, we begin to be able to make aims, again, that will lead us to good. And as several of you pointed out, life is a great teacher. Whatever we're doing, whatever event we're involved in, can be very instructive. I don't know who to credit this saying to, and excluding anything abusive, remember, it's not being done to you, it's being done for you. So let's start with aim. There are a great many commentaries that you can read, and there's a particularly helpful one on page 626 about the meaning of aim in the work. So if you have time, I suggest reading that one. But what is our aim for being in the Journey School? The very first question we must ask ourselves is, what do we want? That's a very large question, and it has a very large answer. Now, for me, it's peace. I want peace. But to say that that's my aim is not enough. You know, just as the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step, the journey to our answer requires many small steps to get there. So we set our daily aims with our work partners, our personal aims for group participation, and whether that's here on Thursday night or in our various journey groups. So aims on different scales, as everything is in life. We talked last week about the importance of scale, and tonight it's going to also be there with lots of things that we're talking about. So aim on the biggest scale, the great scale, is about a relationship with our higher centers, with real conscience. But on a small scale, we make daily personal aims. What do we wish to observe today? Our aim is to make us think, to help us wake up. Now, it seems I'm always forgetting my aim. And I was talking with one of my work partners about that this morning. And she said, well, I just write it down every morning. You know, what a great way to journal. So we work on the side of knowledge. And that's how we become familiar with ourselves through the tools of the work. We apply the work on the side of being. We observe ourselves and apply that first conscious shock as we discussed with Bev a few weeks ago. So there you have the first three notes of the work octave. Do, valuation, learning the work ideas. Re, applying the work principles to ourselves, making aims, thinking in a new way. And me, observing our personal difficulties and in fact, our inability to keep our aims. Second force. Now, I feel pretty sure we have all found it difficult to keep our aims. And the reason for that is that we just don't have the quality of attention that's required. And we do forget to calculate second force. Remember, though, our being draws our life. So as our level of being changes, this is reflected in the way our life is. So we make effort. Think of effort as a muscle, and we have to exercise it because our aim is what's important. One of the things we should observe is the postures of our body, because those always provoke attitudes of the mind. With the right posture, our centers can come together and we can be related. When we have the right inner posture, we have the right attitude. And this allows the contact with the very source of life. This allows us to seek ye first the kingdom of God. Now we need to constantly redefine our aim, because we always fall back asleep. We are subject to identification under the laws of this world, world 48. But as we wish to awaken to that higher world, world 24, the imaginal realm, in ourselves, we wish. All the laws that govern the universe are here and are acting in us. And our aim is that all of these forces will form a whole, W-H-O-L-E. We wish to reunite these forces to give us the power to be fully human. The most important aim is to wish to work to be present. But our effort has to be clear. What we're looking for has to be clear. We have to see, what are our difficulties now? What do we need to understand today? What do we wish to know? All this is to help us live more consciously in our imperfect, mechanical, unconscious world. And we're told in the work that a wish is the most important and powerful thing. And it's because it allows us to take an action that's not automatic. We can choose something we wish to do and make it our aim. If we wish it, we can do it. Now, last week we spoke of the Beatitudes as a guide to our vertical connection and how to rise at our level of being. The Beatitude of blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness has been identified by Dr. Nickel as referring to those who wish to understand the goodness of being and the knowledge of truth that will lead us to a higher level. In the work, we're taught that truth can help us become balanced man in order to follow the good at the level of the conscious circle of humanity. Dr. Nickel said, we hunger for good and thirst for truth, for the union of these two makes the inner harmony called righteousness. Well, before I go there, let me just pause a moment and see, is there anything anyone would like to share on aim? Michael and Pamela? Pamela, I think.
Good evening.
Good evening.
In my experience, daily aim disappears after a while. And I hadn't thought about it until tonight, but it really is about conscience becoming more deeply rooted. And for me, what pulls me forward is real aim that is so deeply rooted in me. The daily aim actually would get in the way. It's like focusing too small. The scale is too small. And as I'm realizing the role of conscience, I guess the scale of intention and attention has changed over time. The observations of what it does that's all there, but it's of no consequence in the light of real aim and of the understanding of scales of lifetimes and karma and who and what I really am and why I'm here. And so I just want to put that into the conversation that, and it doesn't mean anything. I'm not saying that they don't have a place. I'm just noticing that that would be distracting for me at this point.
Well, I wonder if it has also to do with the scale of the level of being. You know, you've been a work student for a long time. You've practiced, your level of being is perhaps at a different piece of the scale than mine, and or I need a daily aim still.
Well, I mean, sometimes very specific aims will arise. But as you mentioned, it's very much just about the present moment. You know, what's happening with the scale of a day. Recently, I had some unloading come up, and so that was what was there to be worked with and prayed with. But it feels like a constriction of my being, I guess. When I actually feel into it bodily, it feels like a constriction of being to make a daily aim. Or to like pile aims upon aims. Like, it's very hard for me to follow the church's annual aim, as beautiful as it is, because it, again, it's a diversion of where the center of gravity is in my real aim. I'm just witnessing to an experience.
Absolutely. Thank you for adding it to the discussion. Yeah. Anyone else? Well, let's go on then. So we're going to go on now into truth and goodness. So goodness is of the emotional center of being. Truth is of the intellectual center of knowledge. But we're told that we as we are can no longer see good directly or be taught directly from good. That first we must change our mind. We must think in a new way, so that we can be taught the knowledge or truth about a higher level of being. So you may remember a few weeks ago, I used this image and called it the stairway of heaven, about the truth that we learn leading us to good, which leads us to a higher truth and a higher good. Until we get to that level of the higher being, where we live in the higher good. So, what is truth? Well, the definition is a transcendent fundamental reality. True, on the other hand, is conformable to an essential truth, to an essential fact, excuse me. And one thing I think this picture demonstrates is the beauty of the difference. So depending on your perspective, whether you see the orange light or the blue, you're seeing the true fact. But the truth is the cylinder. It does not change. And from truth, then, we get justice. So as we keep saying scale, truth is also a matter of seeing scale. And this requires a development of our consciousness well above the level of our waking consciousness. That is why, as we seek to become awake, we've got to have help from another source than life. As we apply knowledge to our being, we gain understanding. And that's when we can get a glimpse of the truth that will lead us to good. As we self-observe, gain knowledge of the truth of ourselves, we can no longer self-justify because we see what we really are. The truth of what we see transforms our attitude toward life. Then we can see reality, which is eternal. When we stop our pursuit of worldly gratification, when we stop looking for position or affirmations from people, then we begin to see the truth of what we are. And when we see the truth of what we are, we begin to end our ego's rule over us. As we understand the instruction to work as if your house is on fire, we begin to purify the eye of our heart so we can starve the ego and allow our essence to bloom. We become, as Lao Tzu said, sick of our sickness. Now we're told repeatedly in the scriptures to be watchful. And watchfulness is not the means of getting what we want, but of knowing what is right, what is true. It's actually our desire to know the truth. We aim to know ourselves, to see our human condition with scathing self-honesty. And from knowing ourselves, then we begin to know truth. Because truth is reality. When we can face a fact as it is, no judgment, no self-justification, we begin to develop the capacity to know. This is the feeling that can bring together what is seen and what sees, the observed and the observer. To know what we are, we must give up the lie, as Don said, the false pictures of ourselves, to make room for this reality, for truth. With the second conscious shock, to feel what we feel, it's possible to see reality and to gain an emotional understanding of truth, which then leads us to goodness. All of us as we are, there is right now only the truth of our false self aims, all those things in life. But truth is not conformity to an external fact. Truth is when we, as the prodigal son, see the nature of our inner state and wish to come home. So another pause there. And is there any comments on truth? Stephen, please.
I finally got unmuted there. You know, I think that one feeds on the other, good and truth. Good, I think we have an innate sense of what's good. But as we add truth in our lives, new revelations of truth, we refine our and maybe expand our sense of good or focus our sense of good. But our sense of good provides us a power of discernment to determine what the truth is. And once they get aligned with each other, maybe the edges blur between good and truth. They're kind of co-accelerators in a way, and complement each other. So,
yeah, thank you. Yes, I agree. Duberly, please.
As truth and aim and conscience, if I put them together and I think of setting a daily aim, I remember something that Donald said in class not too long ago, that when you set aim, you want to push yourself to a point where you start almost cringing in all three centers. You know, and as it relates to truth and conscience, I know what a hard aim would be, a hard daily aim for me. Whether I'm willing to admit it to my work partner or to myself, depends on conscience and how, well, it depends on a lot of things, but I like that relationship between truth, conscience, and setting your daily aim in that regard.
Well, and good work to set a name that makes you cringe. It's easy to fall into the habit of, you know, I'm going to work on this again, whatever that this is. So I will take that to heart, to set an aim that makes me cringe. Thank you. Well, let's go into goodness. So we talked about this several weeks, almost months ago, I guess now. And this wanted to show again that, you know, understanding is the mother of love. And it's love that takes us to truth, because it's the love of the work. It's the love of working on ourselves, our willingness to employ love and the work. And then that truth will take us to good. So it's from goodness that we get mercy. I think it was Catherine it was Cynthia, there we go, who brought up Psalm 23. Well, here we go again. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. You know, truth can open our eyes to the pathway to the kingdom. We apply work ideas to ourselves. And goodness will open our hearts so we can live there as we rise in our level of being. The only bad is ignorance, and ignorance is just lack of knowledge. The good is awakening. But we don't want to judge good or bad, but we get liberation by the diminishment of our ego. We learn truth, we gain knowledge first before we can act from the good to raise our level of being. Now, someone in the scripture is called Christ good master, and his reply is, why are you calling me good? No one is good save God. Well, good unites all, and so is good, is God. Good. God is good. There we go. Thank you. All truth leads to its own good. Every truth seeks union with its own good. Goodness fulfills the truth. Truth by itself is useless. Good without truth is also useless. Why engage in the work if it's not to gain the truth to lead to the goodness of higher being? The truth of the teaching of Christ, the truth about man's inner evolution, is nothing if we don't realize its aim, which is the good it leads to. Now, as Stephen just mentioned, goodness means acting in the right way. We're given images to help us understand, and the image of truth is often a stone, and of goodness, water. And we know in nature, water will mold a stone. It will smooth out a rock, or it'll carve a canyon. The Ten Commandments are truth. They were written on stone. But Christ gave us the water from which we will never thirst. He gave us the fulfillment of the truth with the good of the great commandment. The work makes it possible for us to see the things we judge in others and gives rise within us then to mercy and forgiveness. We've all interfered with others in order to do good for them. Now, as someone who identifies as a 2 on the Enneagram, I used to do this all the time. However, to do good, true good, we must see our reasons and our reactions. We must know ourselves. So in my mechanical 2-ness, I did good deeds to feel better about me or to make others like me. But I can be a 2 on purpose. I can do those things with conscious choice. The greatest good we can do for ourselves is to apply the practical ideas of the work. Now, we're not working for results, but the reward for our work is to be blessed with greater understanding of ourselves and others. So what does God ask of us? I think Micah 6:8 tells us all to act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with God. To act justly from truth, to love mercy from goodness, and to make aims to walk humbly with God. Well, before I ask for any more comments, let me go ahead and go over the homework for this week. So there's a very short commentary on page 163. And please read it. It's a wonderful introductory note on good and truth. Engage in all the practical ways to live in the presence of the work. What do you observe? And then we're reminded that there are wonderful other resources. Dr. Nickel wrote great books called The New Man and The Mark, as well as Living Time. And if you have a chance then to read these, it's rather mind-blowing. So I'm going to be the first to say I'm just really glad I haven't had a coughing fit. But is there anything on goodness or anything on aim and truth that you would like to add that we haven't already said? Well, in that case, Marianne, I'll turn it back. Oh, Sue or Rusty?
I've just been sitting on my hands. This beautiful talk about aim, and I heard something from a psychiatrist or whatever, that he's not a work student, but I find to be pretty insightful. And he mentioned something about positive emotion. Mm-hmm. And we talk a lot about negative emotion, but this idea of positive emotion, and again, probably not in the work sense, but his idea was the truest, most authentic, positive emotion you can have is making progress toward an aim. It's not achieving the aim. That's a whole different psychological experience, but making progress toward the aim. And it's something that's informed my aims and how I've kind of followed them in the course of the day. And I just wanted to offer that up as something that may, you know, resonate with some folks that are, you know, thinking about this stuff.
Well, thank you, Rusty. Thank you. Glad you got off your hand.
You too.
Okay. Marianne, thank you very much.
Thank you, Karen. Something is awry with my video, it looks like. But a closing word from Rodney Collin. Each morning we are to set ourselves an aim for the day, a particular aim, and try with all of our strength to realize it. We may forget it after an hour. We may forget it after 10 minutes. But if for 10 minutes each day we really try to carry out our own aim that we have set for ourselves, then we could be making something of our own that nobody could take away from us. Then we can go on forward. To find truth, we must first know our aim. Let us join together in praying aloud and affirming, wherever we are, the prayer of God's love. That God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, as we stay awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace. Amen.